You know, usually we spend high school trying to figure out how our brains can, like, squeeze into the expectations of the world.
Oh, yeah.
We look at a list of subjects or career paths and just try to contort ourselves to fit the mold. But what if we flip that completely?
Right. What if instead of adapting to the world, you had a precise blueprint of your own cognitive architecture?
Exactly. And you could map the world to fit around your brain instead.
Which really changes the entire premise of education. I mean, at a fundamental level, you stop asking, am I good enough for this path? And
Yeah.
you start asking, does this path actually make use of the specific way my neural pathways fire?
Which brings us to the entire reason we are here today, Sam. This deep dive is custom tailored for an audience of exactly one, you.
That's right, just for you, Sam.
You are in year 10 right now, standing at this massive crossroads of subject selection and, well, post-high school pathways. And I imagine the pressure to just pick a lane is probably deafening right now.
Right. Oh, it has to be. But the good news is, we are looking at a highly detailed document today, your natural ability summary report.
And we should clarify, this isn't like a personality quiz you take on the internet.
No, not at all. It is a functional breakdown of your cognitive wiring. It covers how you process information, how your memory encodes data, and the specific environments where your brain basically operates with the least friction.
So the mission for our deep dive today is to decode this report. We are going to unpack how your brain actually works under the hood.
Yeah, we're getting into the mechanics of it.
And Sam, the most important thing to keep in mind here is that this isn't about boxing you in.
Right, we're not handing you a life sentence here.
Exactly. We aren't going to tell you to just go be an accountant and call it a day. This is a roadmap. It's meant to help you play to your natural strengths so that learning and working feel less like, pushing a boulder up a hill and more like catching a wave.
I like that analogy. And the scope of what we are dealing with here is incredibly layered. We will look at your personal working style, analyze your problem-solving mechanics, and then get into some highly specialized sensory abilities.
The sensory stuff is fascinating, by the way.
It really is. And those abilities dictate how you learn best. By the time we are done, the link between your neural wiring and your year 10 subject choices will be, well, fundamentally clear.
So let's start with the foundation, the environment where your brain actually wants to exist.
Okay, let's get into it.
The report classifies you, Sam, as a researcher or professional. It notes a strong lean toward introversion and something it calls a specialist nature.
Right.
Now, a lot of people hear introversion and they just think, oh, shy. But in a cognitive context, introversion is really about how you manage your mental load, isn't it?
Yeah, that's a huge misconception.
Oh.
Introversion is fundamentally about energy bandwidth. When your brain is geared toward a specialist nature, like yours is, you are wired to seek out deep, complex knowledge.
You want to drill down to the absolute bedrock of a topic.
Exactly. And doing that requires immense cognitive resources. So if you are placed in a highly social, constantly interrupted environment, say a chaotic open plan office or an upfront people engaging role,
Yeah.
your brain has to spend half its energy just filtering out the external noise.
Just managing social dynamics, basically.
Right. Which explains why your danger zones in this report specifically flag upfront people engaging roles and also lacking your own workspace.
It's not that you can't talk to people, Sam. It's that constant external interaction just starves your brain of the quiet bandwidth it needs to do its actual job.
Precisely. Your superpower here is focus drive. You need autonomy and uninterrupted time to become the absolute authority on whatever you're working on.
But wait, the report immediately pairs this solitary, deep thinking trait with something that seems almost contradictory.
Oh, the builder aspect.
Yeah, you are also classified as a builder, a hands-on helper. You have what is called high spatial visualization.
Yes, and that is a critical piece of the puzzle. Spatial visualization is the ability to hold a complex three-dimensional structure in your working memory and like mentally rotate it.
Right, you aren't just looking at a flat blueprint. You are actively walking through the building in your mind's eye.
Exactly. You are mentally simulating physical reality. And because you have this trait, abstract theory just isn't enough for you.
You need something real.
Yeah, you can understand the underlying why of a complex concept,
Oh.
but your brain is fundamentally driven by the how. You have a physiological need to physically connect with your work.
So manipulating tools or technology, producing a tangible, real-world outcome.
Right. You want to see the physical evidence of your specialized knowledge.
I'm really trying to reconcile these two sides of you, Sam. On one hand, your brain demands isolation to research and specialize. But on the other hand, you have this relentless drive to physically build things and see tangible outcomes.
It's a unique combination for sure.
It makes me think of the cognitive engine of an inventor, maybe? Like a master watchmaker. You need a completely quiet, isolated studio to design the genius level schematic, but you also absolutely need to pick up the tweezers and assemble the gears yourself.
I mean, that inventor analogy perfectly captures the dual need for isolation and physical creation.
Yeah.
The way to satisfy this paradox in the real world is through highly structured, expert-driven roles.
What kind of roles does the report suggest?
It points to pathways like civil engineering, radiography, or physiotherapy.
Oh, wow. Okay, that actually makes perfect sense when you break down the mechanics of those jobs. Take radiography, for instance.
Right.
You aren't managing a massive team or hosting a loud seminar. You are operating highly advanced technology, which satisfies the specialist side.
And you are using your hands to physically position a patient and run the machinery.
Producing a tangible, high-resolution scan. You solve a physical problem for one person at a time, entirely on your terms as the expert in the room.
Exactly. You are leveraging your deep knowledge to deliver a physical result without the exhausting cognitive drain of managing large groups of people. It is the perfect synthesis of the isolated researcher and the hands-on builder.
Okay, so if that is the environment where you thrive, the next piece of the puzzle is how you actually process information when you are in that environment.
Yes, let's talk about problem solving.
The report labels you a consultative problem solver. It says you are driven by high classification and high concept organization.
Those are big terms.
We throw those terms around a lot, but neurologically speaking, what is high classification actually doing when you're faced with a mess of data?
So high classification is essentially rapid-fire diagnostic speed. Most people approach a problem sequentially. They look at step one, then step two, tracing the logic linearly to find the error.
Right, standard step-by-step thinking.
High classification bypasses that entirely. Your brain is wired to instantly recognize patterns. You can look at a chaotic, disorganized situation and immediately spot the anomaly.
You identify the core problem almost instinctively.
Exactly.
It's like parallel processing versus serial processing. You aren't reading the book word by word to find the typo. You're looking at the whole page and the typo just like glows red for you.
That is a great way to put it. And then high concept organization kicks in.
Right, the other half of the equation.
High concept is the synthesizer. Once high classification spots the problem, high concept allows you to instantly map out how that single problem affects the entire system.
It reminds me of a GPS navigation system. High classification notices the immediate traffic jam right in front of you.
Yeah.
But high concept is what instantly recalculates the entire map of the city, factoring in all the side streets, to build a brand new route to the destination.
You don't just fix the isolated issue. You solve the structural flaw behind it.
And because you possess both of these, Sam, you can communicate these complex structural solutions in a way that makes logical sense to others. You diagnose rapidly, build the comprehensive solution, and explain it clearly.
However, there is a very specific catch to having a brain that processes problems this efficiently.
Oh, right. The boredom threshold.
Yes.
The report explicitly states you must have mental challenges. If you are placed in a routine, repetitive environment where the problems are already solved, your brain is going to starve for dopamine.
Routine is literally cognitive understimulation for someone with your profile. Your brain has a continuous stream of divergent ideas, a trait the report calls idea rich, or being a brainstormer.
So if one solution doesn't work, your neural pathways don't get stuck.
Not at all. They immediately hand you three alternate options. You think on your feet because your brain is constantly generating new connections.
So we have to talk about how you apply all of those ideas over time, because this part of the report is just fascinating. Your time frame orientation is classified as long-term, strategic, planner, visionary.
That is quite the title.
Right. It means you have a natural capacity to project your life, your goals, and your strategies 5, 10, or even 20 years into the future. You heavily favor delayed gratification over an immediate payoff.
You naturally connect the actions you take today directly to an outcome that is two decades away.
Mm-hmm.
You thrive on big picture concepts and grand scale planning.
I mean, most people struggle to conceptualize their life past the next fiscal quarter, but you are mapping out decades.
It's a huge advantage in the professional world.
But wait, I have to pause on this. Yeah. Sam, you are in year 10. You are, what, 15 or 16 years old?
Yeah, right there.
If your brain is naturally living in the year 2046, continuously mapping out this grand 20-year empire, That seems like a massive risk.
How so?
Well, you could easily become so obsessed with building the future that you completely forget to exist in the present. You might forget to just be a teenager right now.
Oh, that is incredibly perceptive, and the report specifically validates that risk.
Yeah.
It actually issues a direct warning about it.
Really? What does it say?
On one hand, because of this visionary mindset, you absolutely need large future goals. Without a massive, distant target to aim for, you will feel like a boat without a rudder, just drifting. The big goal is what organizes your daily drive.
The destination gives the GPS a reason to calculate the route.
Exactly. But the caution is against letting your consciousness permanently reside in the future. If you are always living 20 years from now, you will miss the joy, the relationships, and the physical reality of today.
Which is such a common trap for highly strategic thinkers.
It is. To counteract this, the report recommends a highly specific compensating skill for you: mindfulness exercises.
That's interesting. We usually hear about mindfulness as just a way to reduce stress or relax.
Right, but here, it's being prescribed as a functional tool to tether a visionary brain to the present moment. It is a cognitive anchor.
Oh, I see.
Practicing mindfulness, actively training your brain to notice the physical sensations of the here and now, prevents you from getting lost in the abstract future. It allows you to let those brilliant divergent ideas flow without becoming detached from reality.
So, Sam, keep the 20-year empire in your head, but actively practice enjoying your lunch today.
Yeah, taste your food.
And speaking of grounding yourself in the present reality, we need to talk about your sensory processing. Because to actually achieve those massive 20-year goals, you have to know how to upload information into your brain today.
Yes, your learning channels, they're basically operating on a different frequency than most people.
The data on how information enters and stays in your brain is striking. Sam, you are in the top 25th percentile for two distinct learning channels. First is strong tonal memory,
which means you encode information exceptionally well through auditory pathways. You can effortlessly remember spoken words, specific tonal patterns, and tunes.
And second, you have strong design memory. You are a high-tier visual learner.
Yes. You store and retrieve graphical information, like images, structural layouts, diagrams with incredible ease.
The combination of those two means that reading black text silently from a flat textbook is probably the least efficient way for you to study.
Oh, absolutely. You aren't utilizing the high bandwidth pathways your brain naturally prefers.
If we look at the mechanics of it, your brain is wired like a hybrid of a high-end recording studio and an IMAX theater.
I love that.
You process auditory and visual data in ultra-high definition. If you want to retain information, you have to feed it through those specific cables.
The study tips in the report align perfectly with this. To leverage your tonal memory, you should be reading your notes out loud.
Oh, interesting.
Your brain needs to hear the physical sound of the words to lock them in. You should use audiobooks, record your own summaries and replay them, or listen to deep dive discussions.
And then to leverage the design memory, you take those auditory notes and translate them into visual architecture.
Right. You draw the diagrams, use color-coded mind maps, and physically draft the structure of the concepts you are learning.
But there is a deeper layer to your sensory processing that acts as an amplifier for both of these memory types, isn't there?
Yes, there is. You possess a specialized neurological trait called pitch discrimination.
The report mentions that because of this trait, people might mistakenly call you picky. But it has nothing to do with being difficult, does it? It's about having a lower threshold for sensory input.
Exactly. Pitch discrimination means your sensory gating system lets in a much wider, more nuanced spectrum of data than the average person. You aren't just hearing a sound. Your brain is processing the microtextures of that sound.
So you hear things others just miss.
You do. You are highly attuned to find differences in vibrations, light gradients, smells, tastes, and physical touch. You notice microscopic details in your environment that literally do not register in a typical neural pathway.
You are picking up on the subtle frequencies that everyone else's brain just filters out. And when you pair this ultra-sensitive pitch discrimination with your tonal and design memory, it stops being just a quirk and becomes a massive professional advantage.
Detecting those fine sensory differences reflects a natural capacity for extreme precision. In the professional world, this heightened sensory awareness is what separates good from elite in highly technical fields.
So we are talking about precision environments like surgery, dentistry, or radar operations.
Absolutely. It also heavily informs artistic and design fields like architecture, high-end photography, or set design, where recognizing the exact nuance of light and physical space is the entire job.
The recording studio and the IMAX theater aren't just taking information in. They are calibrated to produce incredibly precise, high-definition outputs.
But having a sensory system this sensitive comes with maintenance requirements.
What do you mean?
Well, the report flags that your connection to sound and music is almost physiological. Because your tonal memory and pitch discrimination are so highly active, music isn't just a casual interest for you. It acts as a regulatory mechanism for your nervous system.
Oh, wow. So you need it to function.
The report explicitly states that without an auditory outlet, whether that is playing an instrument, singing, or dedicating time to deeply listen to complex music, you will likely feel a sense of imbalance. Your brain requires that specific frequency of input to stay regulated and maintain focus.
It's like having a high-performance engine. You have to run it at the right RPM occasionally, or the whole system starts to stall. Sam, music is a biological requirement for your concentration.
It really is.
So let's bring all of these complex cognitive layers together and apply them to the immediate question sitting on your desk. What subjects and pathways should you choose for year 10 and beyond?
When we cross-reference your need for independent work, your drive to physically build things, your high-speed problem-solving, and your ultra-high-definition sensory processing, a fascinating convergence emerges.
It really does. The report highlights pathways and strong musical abilities in creative, design, or artistic fields.
But it also highlights a highly specific pathway, chef or culinary arts.
The culinary arts pathway is such a brilliant example of how all your distinct traits layer together. I mean, think about the cognitive demands of being a high-level chef.
It's intense.
It requires pitch discrimination to taste and smell the microscopic nuances of flavor profiles. It requires rhythm memory and spatial awareness to move physically and efficiently through a chaotic kitchen.
And it requires spatial visualization for the precise structural plating of the food. Culinary arts is essentially applied chemistry and sensory engineering.
Yeah.
It is the ultimate hands-on, expert-driven environment where you manipulate the physical world to produce a tangible, sensory-rich outcome.
But, you know, if I'm in year 10 looking at this report, I might feel incredibly overwhelmed.
Why is that?
Well, you have genuine neurologically backed pathways in hardcore STEM fields like engineering and surgery. You have pathways in the fine arts like music and architecture. And you have culinary arts.
That's true. It's a lot of variety.
How on earth do you pick your high school subjects when the cognitive circuitry of a civil engineer is the exact same circuitry that makes you a master chef?
The key realization for year 10 is that you aren't supposed to choose between becoming an engineer or a chef today. Subject selection at this stage isn't about locking doors and restricting your future.
So what is it about?
It's about choosing environments that engage your specific cognitive mechanics. You need to look at the subject list and ask, which of these classes will let my brain operate naturally?
Okay. So you look for the underlying mechanisms of the class rather than the job title it allegedly leads to.
Exactly. You want classes that offer a combination of deep, independent theory and tangible physical creation. You should gravitate towards subjects involving design, drafting, or structural technology.
Or science classes that have a heavy hands-on lab component, right? Where you aren't just memorizing formulas, but actively proving them in the physical world.
Yes. Culinary arts or food technology classes are perfect for engaging your sensory processing, too. The goal is to find arenas where you can use your high-level problem solving to figure out the why and your hands to build the how.
And regardless of whether you lean heavily into the sciences or the design subjects, keeping music in your schedule is non-negotiable.
Absolutely. Even if it's just a dedicated hobby, the auditory processing keeps your neural pathways balanced. Playing an instrument will literally make you better at your physics or drafting classes by keeping your cognitive engine regulated.
You are building a diverse portfolio of skills that all feed the exact same underlying cognitive strengths.
That's the beauty of it.
Sam, this has been an incredible journey through the architecture of your own potential. To synthesize everything we've decoded today, you possess the deep diving focus of an independent researcher combined with the spatial awareness and drive of a hands-on builder.
And your brain bypasses normal logic to instantly diagnose problems, while you have the visionary capacity to map out solutions decades in advance.
You take in the world in ultra-high definition through your tonal and visual memory, and your heightened sensory threshold allows you to perceive details that most of the world simply misses.
That's a really powerful profile.
So as you look at those year 10 subject selection forms, do it with the absolute confidence of someone who has seen their own blueprint. You don't have to contort yourself to fit a standard educational mold.
No, you really don't. Your specific wiring is designed for highly specialized precision work. Choose the subjects that let you build, solve, and create.
Sam, before we end this deep dive, I want to hand it over for one final thought.
Thanks. Sam, we know you have this extraordinary ability to project your life 20 years into the future, conceptualizing grand strategies. But you also possess this incredibly rare heightened sensory awareness, your pitch discrimination, and tonal memory that anchors you intimately to the physical sounds, textures, and details of the present moment.
So our question to you is, how can you use your physical senses today to build the tangible daily foundation for the visionary world you're planning for tomorrow?